station from around the nation. It's the 411. We're sharing a cake. What a way to make your day. Sharing K is on the way. It's the 411. We're sharing a cake. It's about newsmakers, movers and shakers. Inspiration from around the nation.
Hi, this is Andrew Young from Atlanta, Georgia. And all over the country, no matter where I go, people are talking about what's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
For real? I ain't playing. Hello, Nashville. All of our truly wonderful people. Y'all doing okay today? Wait a minute. Is this another Wednesday with no rain and stuff?
I guess it is.
That's what's up. That's what's up. And, you know, it seemed like it's at least twice I've been able to say that this month. And a couple of those Wednesdays have not been like that. But, you know, I take what I get and I work with it, honey. Anyway, we are looking beautiful, but it is, you know, still cool out there. In the 30s. And it was cold this morning.
Yes, it was.
Oh, I'm being seriously cold. Anyway, but, you know, as some say, this is what winter's about. Yeah, it is. But they got, I don't know, this one here is just off the chart. I'm ready for spring. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Seriously, I mean, I think, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready for spring, but I'm not ready for tornadoes. Okay, I don't think we could ever get ready for that. That's year-round here, by the way. Anyway, so much in store today. New book this hour, and it's on free speech, and it's interesting and different. And the guest and author is media law professor Ian Rosenberg, and he's been around quite a while in this area, and is looking forward to talking about it. At 4:30, Metro Police Chief John Drake. We'll check in with Chief Drake, see what's up with him and things that are going on on his watch and in the department. And it's been a minute since I hadn't talked to Chief Drake in a minute, have I?
It's been a while.
Okay, so now I gotta get my check-ins. You know, I gotta get my check-ins with people. You know, I have to do my blood pressure checks on everybody. At 5 o'clock, I'm doing another check-in with Metro Schools Director Dr. Adrienne Battle. See how our children are doing and the COVID battle that we're going through in this community and this country, this state, this world. And it won't get on the other side. We won't get on the other side to all y'all come just acquiesce and come on and help us now. Because the troops are going to need some reinforcements. We've been holding up the bloodstained banner for 2 years and some of y'all ain't done nothing. No need to call names here, okay? Now, coming up at 5:30, clinical psychologist, consultant, and author, Dr. Donald E. Grant. That's his first time on the broadcast, and he'll discuss his new book, which explores the framework of white supremacy. Sure, okay, you gotta talk about that stuff today. That's what I do. That's what I do. Commander Chuck will be along to give us a traffic update. So much to talk about. It's not funny, but we don't have time. We need to move into the guest. So happy to have on the show, and I've been looking forward to having this discussion about this book, and in particular the author that's with me today. He is legal counsel for ABC News, Ian Rosenberg, and Ian, in addition, teaches media law at Brooklyn College. He's author of a new book, or co-author of a new book, Free Speech Handbook, and it is so good to have you. How are you today?
I'm well, Sharon. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, of course, of course. Such an important topic. It seems like, you know, every time that the discussion comes up about free speech, it's always so important. But in these times that we're in now, it is, folks have to be reminded, because it's used and misused. And how do you, as before we go into the book, how do you describe the times that we are in now and where free speech stands?
Well, I think you're right that people are certainly buzzing about free speech and have a lot of questions. They're both clamoring for their rights, but not really sure what those rights entail. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wrote Free Speech Handbook, was to give people a guide and a framework for understanding not only where our rights are today, but how we got there and maybe where we'll be going in the future. So each chapter in Free Speech Handbook begins with a contemporary question about free speech, like, can Colin Kaepernick take a knee? Or what about Nazis marching in Charlottesville? Or can Twitter kick off the President of the United States from its feed? And then it answers those questions by telling the story of the past, where people fought for those very free speech rights all the way up to the Supreme Court, and how the Supreme Court's decision provides answers. So that's the structure of the book, and I think, you know, now more than ever, people are really looking for these types of guidance, this type of guidance, to hopefully give them some understanding of where we are in the law today.
Yeah. Well, I do like the format as well, because actually, at first I was like, World Citizen Comics, is he going to make, you know, so I received it and I started really taking a look at it. I think it's an amazing way through the comics that you're telling the story and teaching people lessons at the same time. Was that part of your goal, Ian?
Absolutely. So, as you say, Free Speech Handbook is part of the World Citizen Comics line of civics-oriented graphic novels from First Second, part of Macmillan. And what I think is so exciting about this is not only does it make the stories of free expression more accessible, it also, and that's thanks entirely to my brilliant co-creator, Mike Cavallaro, who's the artist who brought these images to life. But it's also so it makes it more accessible, but it also really visualizes some complicated metaphors that I think just hearing about them or just reading about them doesn't necessarily give people a full understanding. So when we talk about the marketplace of ideas, Mike has visualized that as an actual outdoor market where people are selling ideas and notions. And I think it really gives people a sense of what that metaphor means visually and sort of in terms of a kind of gut understanding. So this is a comic book, but it is a nonfiction, serious way of telling these stories of free expression. And many of these big, big free speech cases that we talk about also involve visual expression. It's somebody wearing an armband to protest the Vietnam War, or somebody flipping the bird at the President of the United States, or has a jacket that has some cursing written on the back. So I think seeing that through the medium of comics makes it all the more powerful.
Now let me start with one of the ones that you just mentioned, your chapter 2, Take a Knee and the Pledge of Allegiance. The Colin Kaepernick, it's like, are y'all serious? You know, you just look at this whole thing as, I cannot believe that this is where this country has gone. Tell the audience what they will learn about free speech in this particular chapter and through the scenarios.
Yes, well, I mean, I think the Colin Kaepernick Take a Knee protests are really the seminal protest movement of recent years, and there's obviously a lot of controversy and misunderstanding about that. So we begin that chapter with Kaepernick and telling a little bit about his story, and then we say, you know, the right to protect people from compelled speech, for expressing a message that they don't necessarily agree with, goes all the way back to World War II and involves Jehovah Witness students who refused to pledge allegiance to the flag because they believed it was a violation of their religious principles. They saw it as a form of idolatry. And during World War II, this was a very equally controversial stand to take. Some people were just saying this is a time that we needed to be unified and patriotic. But when the case gets to the Supreme Court, after these school children had been expelled for refusing to pledge allegiance, Justice Jackson has a really strong and beautiful opinion, which says that if our First Amendment rights need anything, particularly at this time when we're fighting fascism during World War II, it means that people have a right not to speak, that there is a right to have the government to protect us from the government forcing us to express a message that we don't believe in. So what's interesting about that, even more so, and how that applies to Colin Kaepernick, is that because Colin Kaepernick was working for the NFL, a private employer does not have to follow the First Amendment. That's one of the running themes of Free Speech Handbook that I hope people will get a better understanding of, is that the First Amendment protects us against government interference with our speech. It doesn't really impact at all involving private actors or private corporations. So while the NFL might have a legal right to restrict Kaepernick, I think they're violating sort of free speech principles by doing so. But while they might have a legal right to stop him from engaging in his protest message, the very same action, if engaged in by public school students, so if high school athletes or even junior high school athletes take a knee and their school authorities try to punish them in some way for that action, because they are considered government actors, public school employees are considered part of the government, they would have, those students would have the right to refuse to have that message sort of forced on them, to have to accept the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem. And because of that, and because of these school children from World War II, the Barnett kids, they have a right not to speak. So it really matters who is interfering with your speech rights, and it's one way in which school children actually would have more power and greater free speech protections than employees of the NFL.
So in the direction that this was going in at the time, and being though you have the background as being an attorney for media, this had to be one wild ride, because it still continues, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, one of the other reasons, besides feeling that there was a need for this book out there, that I wanted to write this book, is that as a lawyer for a media company, I certainly do think that there has been a lot of misinformation and a lot of demonization of the press that is totally misguided and as well as legally inaccurate. And one of the misunderstandings that's been promulgated is this idea that the media can lie and get away with it, and that's the way our libel laws are structured. So in another chapter, I begin with that question, and then I tell the story of the Sullivan case, which actually involved Dr. Martin Luther King and other civil rights activists who were sued for libel by Southern officials. And their case goes to the Supreme Court, and the court gives the King defendants, as well as the New York Times, who had also been sued, a great victory. And that victory does protect the media from getting making small mistakes, but it does not in any way protect against intentional lying or reckless disregard for the truth. So that is the actual malice standard that people know that phrase, but they don't really know what it means.
Right.
So I'm trying to clarify, because as you say, these are still issues that are affecting us today. I'm trying to clarify for people to understand that although the media is well protected, and that protection comes from civil rights activists of the civil rights era, in fact, today, we still have those protections, but it certainly does not mean that there is intentional lying is permitted in our libel laws. If that happens, somebody could sue and win a significant judgment.
Do you see, and knowing that, I guess your next book, that because there's so much for you to cover in terms of this issue, with people taking their use or abuse of free speech and turning it into hate speech. Do you have that in inside of the free speech handbook, Ian?
I do, and it's really one of the most troubling and I think counterintuitive subjects. We talk about how the Nazis marching in Charlottesville was certainly one of the most disturbing acts of free speech that has happened in recent years. And I'm Jewish, and I found that horrific to have to watch on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But people have the misunderstanding. They'll say, well, free speech may exist, but that doesn't protect hate speech. And that is not the way the Supreme Court views it. The Supreme Court says that hate speech is protected, and to explain that, I talk about a recent case involving the Westboro Baptist Church, which was the hate-filled fringe church that used to protest outside of military funerals in their misguided belief that military deaths were God's punishment that they viewed for America's acceptance of LGBTQ rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so they protested outside of a military funeral, and the father, Snyder, just wants to bury his son in peace. He sued them for intentional infliction of emotional distress. He wins, but the case goes to the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Roberts says that as hateful as this may be, if the First Amendment means anything, it means that we cannot punish speakers just because we disagree, even vehemently disagree, with their message. So if people are not physically interfering with a funeral, if they are not physically harming people, just the fact that they're speech is filled with hate is in fact protected, and this is this is very hard for people to take, and there are very smart people who disagree with this view, but that's what the law is, and this book is more descriptive rather than prescriptive. It's telling you what the law is, and then if you want to advocate for change, you have to have a starting point of knowing where we are today. So it's a very tough part of free speech law today, but the Supreme Court is very clear.
Now, with the current makeup of the Supreme Court, the new Supremes sing quite differently a song. They do. And, it was to be predicted that this was going to go down like this. Can you see a time, Ian, when they will try to undo free speech?
Well, that is a very good question, and I think the answer is no, because one of the things that's surprising about free speech law and the makeup of the court is that free speech law is really embraced by both liberals, traditional liberals on the court, as well as conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, we had people like Thurgood Marshall and Justice Marshall and Justice Brennan, who were liberal champions of free speech protections, often in the context of civil rights protests or anti-Vietnam War protests.
Mm-hmm.
But today we have people like Chief Justice Roberts, who considers himself one of the foremost champions of free speech law today. And the last chapter of the book talks about a decision from Justice Kennedy before he stepped down, which was a ringing protection of free speech rights online. So free speech law does not break down under on traditional sort of liberal conservative principles. Who they're protecting might shift, but I believe that even on this very conservative court, that we will have a continuation of the free speech protections that we have had from the past. And in some ways, that shows about the strength of free speech sort of ideals as they're embedded in our American psyche, is that both ends of the political spectrum view it as a right that needs protection.
Well, we thought that about voting rights as well, and other things that over time, decades of settled law, we thought it about that as well. But we're finding that, you know, they're finding ways of how to undo it.
Well, you're absolutely right. The conservative court and many of the conservative justices, including Chief Justice Roberts, who's sometimes perceived as a swing vote, are not stalwart protectors of voting rights. And while I find that personally abhorrent, that's another chapter, another topic for further discussion. But whereas liberal versus conservatives on the court have gone all over the map on voting rights, there is a lot more consistency in the free speech law doctrine.
Okay. So, at least for a moment, we can still know we have that, you know, for now.
Yes, but I also think you bring up a point about that's important to recognize about, you know, sort of how tenuous are our protections.
Mm-hmm.
And, in the afterword of the book, I talk about how George Orwell, after World War II, said that, you know, even if the laws protect free speech, if the people don't believe in free speech and the people don't seek out protecting their rights, then the laws won't matter. Then minorities and dissenting viewpoints will be persecuted or prosecuted for their views. And that's another reason why I want people to read Free Speech Handbook and to get an understanding of their First Amendment rights. Because while I talk about Supreme Court cases as a clear way of explaining the law, really free speech activity happens and free speech and threats to free speech happen every day on a really grassroots level. They happen at our community boards and at school meetings in our churches and our mosques and our synagogues. It happens all over, and it's never going to get to the Supreme Court. And what the law really is might not ever be a topic that gets addressed before the speech is interfered with. So I really do think that we do need, as a grassroots activity, to protect our free speech rights every day. And I hope that Free Speech Handbook provides people with the tools to do that.
Well, I certainly think so at all levels. Are you hoping that from high school or middle school, high school on up, is that who you hope to attract to the book?
Yes. I think, you know, sort of eighth grade, my son turned eighth grade, and I think sort of eighth grade on up is the ideal audience for this book. You know, both because it's a graphic novel, I think students can really engage with it. But, you know, as an adult, I love reading graphic novels, too. And I think there's a sort of a new appreciation for nonfiction graphic novels, books like John Lewis's March trilogy, where I learned so much about his struggle and the civil rights movement, are really showing people that graphic novels, nonfiction graphic novels, are something that can be enjoyed by all ages. So, I think starting in eighth grade and through high school and college is a great resource for those students.
Well, I hope the book doesn't make, as the folks, you know, that don't like CRT, this might offend them and make them feel uncomfortable. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, like our governor signed the bill that, you know, don't make the white kids uncomfortable. But you have,
free speech makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really one of the things. So I can't promise that nobody is going to be disturbed by this book. But that's also, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's also really one of the themes of this book, is that at its core, core are free speech rights being that unpopular views, that dissenting views, are really at the core of our First Amendment protections. So, you know, we start off in the 1920s in this book talking about anarchists who are protesting World War One. Then we go into the World War II years and have Jehovah's Witnesses who, as we were talking about, don't want to pledge allegiance to the flag in school. Then we get to the anti-Vietnam War protests of again, middle school students wearing an armband in protest, or an adult wearing a jacket that cursed about the draft. And so, you know, what the issue is that people, going all the way to the present with social media, so what the issue is that people are upset about changes, but their right to express dissent and how the First Amendment protects that right, I think is really fundamental to the American experience. And I hope that people will remember that, and will remember that sometimes it's good to be upset and it's good to be discomforted, because that's how we make a better democracy.
Yeah, and you learn things, you know.
And you learn things, too. Because that's what the marketplace of ideas is all about.
Absolutely.
That the best test of truth is the power of an idea to get itself accepted in the market. And so, you know, if you're going to learn, if you hear something you disagree with and you then start thinking about it, you might learn something and change your mind.
And it's a miracle they learn something. You know, what's the purpose of being on Earth, you know?
Absolutely.
Not to be dumb as a box of rocks, y'all. Come on. Anyway, I am just tickled to death to have Ian Rosenberg on. He has over 20 years of experience as a media lawyer and has worked as legal counsel for ABC News since 2003. Is a media law professor, I call him professor, teacher at Brooklyn College, and author of the new book, Free Speech Handbook. And it is a World Citizen Comics, and as part of their series. And I do think that you all, no matter what age, are going to get something from this book. Ian, thank you so much. This was such a cool chat. I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot.
Thank you, Sharon. I had a lot of fun, too. I appreciate your time.
Okay, the book is available everywhere books are sold.
Everywhere books are sold, and if people want to find out more about it, they can go to freespeechhandbook.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Ian. I have time, just enough time for one story, right? Just enough. It's always one that I'm saying, Lord, please. This is out of Nashville, of course. A lot of crazy stuff been coming out of the city. Tennessee's black lawmakers say that their attempts to raise awareness surrounding structural racism may have repeatedly been dismissed by their white colleagues. Go figure! That air of suspicion intensified after the GOP-controlled General Assembly unveiled plans earlier this month to split Nashville into three congressional districts, effectively making it easier to flip a Democratic-controlled district that critics say will also dilute the state's black vote. No kidding. Now a Republican lawmaker wants to advance a resolution. Here we go. Dismissing the existence of deep-rooted racism in the military. As detailed in Associated Press investigation, Representative Halsey's resolution declares racism inside the military, quote, does not exist, and describe such findings as false charges. Now, I'm feeling very uncomfortable with that statement.
That's a lie.
Okay, now that is where I have to create a new term called CWT, critical white theory. I'm getting uncomfortable. Black woman uncomfortable with that one, okay? I'm uncomfortable with that one. Okay, you are making me uncomfortable, and I'm having a... Where's the fan? Okay, let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance.
Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. Moving a little bit better on 40 westbound around Charlotte Pike. It was really slow earlier from that crash. Starting to build on the South Loop, the West Loop, 65 and through Robertson County, still very slow. This traffic report brought to you by PensacolaBeach.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from TPAC, featuring a book by Tina Fey, Mean Girls, tells the story of a naive newbie who falls prey to a trio of lionized frenemies. Entertainment Weekly calls it a marvel, dazzling, and hilarious. And USA Today says we'll let you in on a little secret because we're such good friends. Coming soon to Tennessee Performing Arts Center, February 8th through the 13th. Tickets at tpac.org. WFSK's Artist of the Week feature puts the spotlight on smooth and contemporary jazz recording artists. This week, hear from trumpeter and composer Rick Braun. Enjoy some prime cuts and win his brand new release, Rick Braun Essentials. That's Artist of the Week on Thursdays during the noon hour on Jazzy 88 WFSK, where Nashville's Jazz Station. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Taking you home. Got to have some laughter in there. Because you, let me assure you that after living as many years as I have, this stuff, you have to laugh. Because it's like, oh, Lord, Joe, what are you about to do next? As you were in the military, I was raised in a military town. My daddy worked for the military.
Yep.
Had veterans in the family, military, black, back to the beginning of time. So, what did you say when we, that story is insanity, right?
It's more than insanity. It really just, it irks my nerves when people do stuff like that.
Yes.
Because they know good and well that they're lying.
Yes, they are.
So it just, it's like, you have the audacity.
Yes.
To put together a...
They do.
A resolution. Yeah.
Declaring that it's no such thing as that.
They do it because they can get away with it.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the part
that burns
me up. Yeah.
They can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I have been talking about this now for quite some time about the undoing of things.
Yeah.
And you all are about to see more undoing thanks to the...
Racism
the legislature.
Why I got out of the military. It wasn't the reason, but it was one of the reasons, because I was saying to myself, I'm not doing this for 20 years. I'm not taking this for no 20 years and having somebody hold things over me like that. I'm not doing it. And so that was one of the reasons.
Well, I mean, just to me, it's like a slap in the face to veterans, mm-hmm. the black veterans that may have experienced what they have. It's also a slap in the face to the families of the veterans who have heard stories and who maybe they themselves have been subjected to things based on race and color and ethnicity. And to sit there and pretend, you know, this pretension stuff, it has got to stop. You know, I mean, there should be the brakes on it right now. Because you have a resolution, Representative Halsey, that you want to pass through that says it does not exist. I'm going to see how many people are going to concur with you, including is the governor going to accept it and is he going to object? Because, I mean, this is like it's a it's a get rid of us season in Nashville. Oh, and it's like, my black folk, I told you that, you know, it was the end. Thanks for what y'all did to help build the city up, but we don't need you no more. I'm just telling you, not tripping. I just follow the headlines. I just see where things are going. And I want to, we're getting ready to pull in Chief Drake, and I am going to miss talking to Congressman Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
I have been interviewing Congressman Cooper the entire time he's been in the legislature. I think he's been in 34 years. And I have been interviewing him in Nashville on in the media. I've been here 36, 37 in the media. And he has always, always responded. And except for, you know, when it was an emergency or he was in a meeting or something like that, I am truly going to miss him.
Yeah, that's true.
But he does deserve a life.
Yeah.
You know, he really does. He lost his wife and he's... You know, never in all these years hasn't had a chance to breathe. So, and he gets to now do some things he wants to do. So I very much appreciate him and, you know, supporting another station. And I certainly am going to miss him as the decimation of this district gets underway. Let me say hello. And I hadn't talked to you. Let me say hello to Chief Drake. I had not spoken to you personally in quite some time. You have been so busy and over here, over there, doing all this stuff. How you been? You doing okay?
I've been doing great. I really miss talking to you, so it's an honor to be back on, and appreciate you even having me on. But it has been super busy.
I figure. You know, I have the joy of always having... When I have the chiefs in the studio, I said, this is the only time I have the upper hand with the law enforcement because we in control of these mics up here. And that's why I always have the chiefs on because, you know, if I give an extra sign, he can cut your mic right off. You know? But, of course, you know, I've never had to do that. But anyway, having said that, Chief, I'm looking forward to this, and that is when we're on the other side of the pandemic and you can actually come up to the station in person. And that we could, and hopefully the community will feel more inclined to want to get on the phone and call and ask questions and make comments and things of that nature. So, that's what the future
is. Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. Now, before we talk about some of the things that we're going to talk about, could you speak on the impact of the pandemic on the department and where it stands today?
So COVID has had a tremendous impact on the department. We've had several employees that contracted COVID, had several that quarantined because they thought they had it. We had one employee that actually, a civilian employee that died from COVID. We had one of our SWAT personnel was in the hospital with double pneumonia in their lungs, and fortunately they made it through. But we've had a severe impact. Over 300, I believe, have contracted it since the virus began.
Wow.
We've spent tons of money initially buying hand sanitizer, masks to try to keep our personnel and the community safe. So it's had a big impact. And it's still really, we're still tracking that. And with Omicron and now this sub-variant of Omicron, it's still impacting our police department. There's someone contracting COVID more than a few every day.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I know that, you know, I had been noticing the stories nationally of how the impact has been on first responders and police officers and firefighters and et cetera. And, you know, they're getting sick and having problems with the pandemic as everyone else is, but you all are still expected to continue to do your jobs. And knowing that that's the case, Chief, and things are the way they are for a multitude of reasons. Are the gentlemen and ladies of the Metro Police Department, are they taking the vaccination and boosting seriously, or are they just what?
Well, you know, they're just like the rest of society. I think we're about 55% vaccinated. I wish it was a lot higher. We have more and more that are getting vaccinated and boosted. I've done all of that. Had mine televised through the media, taking both the first and second shot. Not my booster, but it's very political. This virus has some people that still believe it doesn't exist, despite all the data and all that's the deaths and sickness, illnesses, et cetera. So the police department is no different. We're over 50%, but I wish we were a lot higher.
I wish you all were, too, so we wouldn't feel like, you know, when we come in contact, if we do, God, we pray we don't, but, you know, that, you know, we don't know, and people don't know, those are the ones that, you know, can pass it on, and that's the greatest fear all of us have. And, you know, I've said that before, and I said it during last year to the fire department official, that, you know, you all, we need you all, okay, and not caving into that stuff, and just, this is a health emergency. Let's get it done, you know. Let's get it
done. Yeah, and I tell everyone, too, if you feel the slightest bit ill, stay home. Mm-hmm. And they've been adhering to that. We had the New Year's Eve celebration, and we had about 30 officers that felt ill, and they called in because they couldn't work. But we had built in a contingency plan to make sure we wouldn't be short. So we were going to be over if no one called in, but turned out we turned out pretty good. So they are adhering to that, and so we're taking every precaution we can to keep the community safe, sterilizing vehicles, wearing masks, doing other things. So I just wish our vaccination numbers were just a little bit higher.
I do too. I really do. And that's going to be my prayer, my constant prayer for 2022, is that, you know, people see this for what it is, and not turn it into the political three-ring circus that they have. Now, and with news of, I keep track of watching off and on, you know, the jails and, you know, the folks, you know, talking about getting COVID. And, you know, today, District Attorney Glenn Funk says he tested positive for COVID. And this has to weigh heavy on you and how you operate in that facility. So what do you have in place, your protocols for your facility?
So we have masks are strongly encouraged. And so people wear masks when they're in the building. We want officers to wear masks or really not call in sick if they're exhibiting any signs of any illness. If they feel like they have a cold, we want that as well. Hand sanitizer, we spent got probably over $100,000 or more buying hand sanitizer. We even sent a vehicle to North Carolina to pick up a vat of hand sanitizer just to bring it back, a day trip. But we're doing everything we can for that, and so that's been helping quite a bit. In the police department, when I say 55%, we have 1,034 people vaccinated. That's pretty good. We just need to do a lot better.
Yes, absolutely. I would certainly feel better about it. And now, other leading problems. As Nashville has begun to get out of the house and do things and stuff, and people are coming, the tourists, they seem like they don't care nothing about it. They're just going to come to Nashville. And I noticed that they stopped, but they really didn't stop. How has that impacted the delivery of the law enforcement services here in Davidson County?
I tell you, Nashville never stopped. It never stopped growing. It never stopped with the tourist industry. Mm-hmm. We did have a little bit of a shutdown during the mask enforcement, et cetera. But once it opened back up, people came here in droves and continue to come. And so we're just asking the businesses downtown and other places to strongly encourage masks, to encourage, you know, just taking all the safety protocols to keep from having some type of super spreader event. And so they've been working with us quite a bit, too. We have not seen a major uptick. I know at one time the White House sent some individuals down because Broadway itself was the hotbed for COVID here in Tennessee. And so that got turned around, and so a little bit better. People still, it's such a political disease. I've never seen politics around a disease like this, but we're so divided on so much. But people, you know, they argue even about kids wearing masks. And I give you an example. I was in a hospital, and my grandson hates masks. He does not want to wear it, but he's 3 years old. But he'll wear one if I put one on. So I put one on, and we're on the elevator, and this lady gets on, and she asks him, "How old are you?" And he holds up three fingers. Mm. He said, "I can't believe you have to wear a mask." And I said, "Ma'am, have a good day."
Yes, I can dig it. I can definitely dig it. You want your grandson to live.
Yeah.
I just dread the day, and I vividly remember when it began to be a political issue, and I was like, this is the worst possible thing a nation, a world can do over something like this that, you know, last one was 102 years ago. And why, y'all, why, you know, this is where right. We're supposed to stand shoulder to shoulder and try to help each other, not hurt each other. And that really does disturb me greatly. And something else I've noticed too, constant, and this was something that we had talked with you last time, Chief, was about these people putting the guns in the cars and leaving their cars unlocked, and next thing we know, we got issues. And last year's stats didn't surely do prove that out, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, you're looking at comparison, and we keep trying to keep people from leaving guns and vehicles, whether locked or unlocked, but most are unlocked. And we've had 127% increase. And from 2017, we had 576 guns stolen in a year. In 2021, we had 1,307. It's just unbelievable the number of guns that are stolen. But even more troubling with that is that when these guns are stolen, they're going to be used in a crime, whether it's going to be a robbery, a homicide, or whatever else they use it in. These guns are destined to commit other crimes. And so we need people to secure their weapons at home in a safe and not leave them in vehicles. If they know, if they're going out to a club and they can't have it in the club or a party event, leave it at home. Don't put it in the vehicle.
I just don't know why. It's so just, that is the simplest thing that they could do to keep this havoc down and these crimes down and people's lives from being turned upside down. Let's go to the phone and see what's on the minds of our people out there. 615-329-8810. Donna, thank you so much for holding. You have a question for Chief Drake?
Yes, I do. Chief Drake, my name is Donna. It's been years since I've seen and spoke with you, and I want to tell you I've been following you for years, and I am so proud of you and what you're doing. The reason why I was calling, being born and raised here in Nashville, I know when we were learning how to drive, we had to get our permit, and then, you know, you graduate up to your driver's license. But lately, I've seen a lot of drivers, if you had a red light, people are still running the light, and the light has been red for a while. And I was wanting to know, what can we do? There have been times I have blown at the person. I mean, literally, they will run through a red light, like they don't even see it. And what can we do as citizens, or what can the police department do to combat this? Because it's dangerous. And it happens in, like, off Dickinson Road near Skyline, which is a very bad intersection, dangerous intersection, starting out. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that and what can be done about it.
Hey, well, Donna, thank you so much for that message, and it's good to talk to you as well. And it's good to talk to a native Nashvilleian. I mean, we're the unicorn, that's for sure. but I want to say that's something we're seeing a lot of, too. People are impatient everywhere they go. It has to be in a hurry. People are frustrated about whatever, running lights, speeding down interstate. So we created a traffic division, and we put a captain over that. It's Captain Walburn, and he's solely handling traffic in major intersections, high crash intersections, high crime intersections. And so when you have these crimes that are occurring at red lights or on interstate, just give us a call, or you can go online, find me on the government website, police. You see a little envelope. Click on that envelope and email me. It'll go to myself and my administrative assistant.
Mm-hmm.
We'll make sure some people are notified to go in that area and do enforcement. But I also want to say, too, that just going beyond traffic, I think we need to ask everyone on this call and people in Nashville in general to take a deep breath, exhale, and it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be okay if you're a couple of minutes late. It's going to be okay if you're having a bad day. It's going to get better. I think with COVID, it's kind of exposed some concerns of how fragile we are.
Mm-hmm.
As a society, and so we need to just take a deep breath, step back, and relax. But as far as reporting it, let us know the intersections,
okay,
and we'll work those through enforcement, but not just for citations, but also education,
yeah,
to help as well.
Yeah, and you know, you really literally, for real, though, and that's interesting that she would say driver's ed, because in driver's ed classes, and to get your driver's license, you know, you can't just blow through. And not just that, but, you know, you have to look both ways and things of that nature. So that is, you know, thank you, Donna. And knowing that that is the case, let me stay sort of in the license and the driving area for just a minute. What are your thoughts about Nashville being a city with automatic license plate readers? And I know it has been controversial around in the United States, and our council just oversight group board just is against it. What are your thoughts as the chief of the Metro Nashville Police Department?
So thank you for that question, and I firmly support license plate readers, known also as LPRs. I'm a native Nashvilleian. My family lived here. I have extensive family all throughout this area, and I would not do anything that I would think would jeopardize any Nashvilleian and also my family as well. We have people that are stealing cars and going out and committing crimes. The license does not surveil anyone. It picks up a license plate image that's been entered, whether the car has been stolen or involved in a crime, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
It won't hit on just the normal person who's driving around the community.
Mm-hmm.
There's people saying that we're going to share information with federal authorities. That's untrue. People say that we're going to give it to private investigators because maybe customers are out cheating. Maybe we should, but we won't do that either.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to use that solely as a tool to try to combat some of the crimes that we're having.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we had a murder that occurred January 6th here in Nashville. It was down on Dixon Road. The individual stole the car and was in the Atlanta area, got picked up on a license plate reader in a stolen car, was able to apprehend her, and she confessed to the robbery and murder. So it's a very viable tool, and it's not, there's a lot of rumors out there and a lot of misconceptions, but we're going to have a very strong policy. We'll involve the COB as far as the policy goes as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've spoken against it a little bit, but my position is we want to make sure from the police department and from their perspective, we don't have any misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to make sure that doesn't occur. And we want to make sure we provide the best service for Nashville with these crimes that are current. For instance, we recovered in 1 week alone over 60 vehicles and about 20 guns from areas that we have been working. Imagine if we had license plate readers for these people in these cars getting ready to go commit a crime, whether they're going to rob me, you, or anyone. And then we just arrest them in a stolen car, which is bad enough, and recover the gun. But maybe we're not talking about murders. Maybe we're not talking about robberies. It's a major asset, for, especially for a short-staffed police department. I think it'd be very vital, too.
Well, I think of some of the community out there, and probably the COB may, you know, be thinking that it's going to be a mechanism to target the black community. And you say to that what?
It's not going to be to target certain groups. That's not what this is for. This is about people that have committed a crime, and that information has been entered. We're not trying to surveil anyone. And more importantly, what we have to think about, too, is that a lot of cars have been stolen, guns have been used, and then the black and brown community, about 80% of our homicides is that demographic.
Yes, it is.
And then when we look at the suspects that are arrested from that, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we stop some of that? I mean, if we can stop some of these crimes from occurring, these violent crimes, then we can cut back on them. We can have a lot of success in our community. It's not about surveillance. That's not it. And privacy, I believe in privacy, too. I'm probably one of the most private people. But what we need is a tool to be able to stop those that are committing violent crimes and then, you know, try to find some alternatives for them.
Yeah. And just before I go, this story this morning about this father, you know, driving like a lunatic down Bell Road in Antioch, and, you know, his children are dead as a result of it. There is a unit in the police department that investigates situation like this, isn't it, Chief?
It is. We have aggressive driving. We have traffic units. We have a fatal unit as well. And so when these crimes occur, it really is a crime. My daughter can tell you this. I would sit in the car, and she'd be in high school, and she'd get in the car, and I'd just sit there, and she'd put a seatbelt on. The car would not move until it happened. In this unfortunate situation this morning, there was a 61-year-old father driving down Bell Road, it didn't have his kids restrained, so a 4-year-old was killed, and a 3-year-old was injured. Neither one was restrained in either a child seat or a seatbelt, and he had his seatbelt on, and lo and behold, he just had some minor injuries. I wish we could say the same things for his kids.
Lord have mercy. This irresponsible parenting is one of America's leading problems. It's irresponsible parenting. I mean, I watch it on the news. I see stories about it. And I'm like, you're going to restrain yourself? You're going to seatbelt you and leave the kids to just fly around?
Exactly.
If that's not irresponsible parenting. And driving fast when he's speeding?
We believe he was, but we'll find out as the investigation continues, but more than likely. So.
Lord. And 61, he's old enough to know better. Yeah, he certainly is. And that was a horrific crash. And that poor baby that died, a 4-year-old son, that poor child, that was awful.
It's super tragic, and I've done this job. March 16th will be my 34th year. And it still hurts me when I hear things that happen to kids.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a 4-year-old, and this could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And a 3-year-old could have been prevented by just being responsible and making sure people had their seatbelt on and taking every precaution as they drove.
Mm-hmm.
Your children are your most precious commodity, and we have to take care of them.
Yeah, absolutely, on their blessings. And we have got to treat them like they are so they can grow up to be blessed human beings.
Right.
And that's what we put out. We get back, y'all. Let's just think in terms of that. Chief Drake, I do look forward to the day. You know, I bet you a good pawpaw. I bet. I know that, you know, when pawpaw says it, little man does it, right?
Yeah, he does. He does. He adores his grandfather too, and I love that too.
So. Oh, I know you are. I know you. You grandpas are something else out there. Y'all have that magic touch on them grandbabies, because they just go, okay, you know, and it just is amazing. It's amazing. But he has you wrapped around his finger too now, right?
He does, but you know, when he does something that he knows he shouldn't do, he'll look at me because he knows I'm going to correct it. It's kind of funny, because before he does, he'll look at me, and then he'll shake his head like, no. I'm like, okay, you got it.
That is beautiful. I love it. I love it. I'm excited about that. And, Chief, it's always good to hear your voice, and, you know, keep up what you're doing, and I'll be in touch again soon. And thank you so much for your work, okay?
Well, thank you as well, and I look forward to being in studio in person in the near future, and look forward to being on here again real soon. So thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you now.
Take care.
All right, you too. All right, that was Metro Police Chief John Drake, Nashville. Chief Drake hadn't been up in here. He hadn't been up in here in a long time. So, thank you for your time. And coming up, speaking, because, you know, I'm doing all the check-ins, y'all. You know, it's January, and I'm trying to do all my check-ins. Coming up in just a minute after the news, Metro Schools Director Dr. Adrian Battles, so we can get all of our Metro stuff handled this afternoon. So let's take a quick timeout, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.